Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with a generational talent, and he is exceptional in so many areas. Certainly, he's a pianist, a composer, an educator, a producer, and I can't even call him a jazz pianist because he does so much more than that. But I think when they want to put somebody in a nutshell, they do it, and they say jazz pianist or jazz composer. He's so much more than that. Gospel and just beautiful music all over the place. Cyrus Chestnut is our very special guest, and I'm thrilled to have him. Cyrus, how are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm glad to be on with you.
Same here, and that's true, right? People like to pigeonhole, or they like to categorize you so much, and I don't know that it's fair to just say jazz pianist. You do a lot of different styles of music, and jazz you do very well, but do you ever feel that you get grouped into one category because it's easier?
Yeah, I guess people have a necessity to want to, I guess maybe for their own convenience or whatever, say, oh, this is what you are, try to put you in a category so that, you know, for whatever reasons they might. A lot of times, you know, of course, yes, I operate in the jazz idiom, but I don't feel like I'm limited to the jazz idiom. The music that I do play is kind of like a fusion of many different idioms. You've mentioned gospel. You mentioned, of course, jazz. There's maybe a classical element. So I'm just influenced by life. And so it's my hope to be able to just become a good musician, whether it's a jazz musician or whatever. There's certain umbrellas that you operate under, and yes, I do operate under the jazz umbrella, but you know, I don't always wear a pork pie hat. I think that's the best way to come down to this. So I don't always wear a pork pie hat. So if I'm writing a piece for a chorus, you know, it doesn't always have to be a bebop chorus. It could be a traditional chorus. So, you know, I know it can be a struggle, but you just keep going forward, you know.
How, not to cut you off, but how early did it start for you? How early did you start?
I started in music at the age of 3.
Wow.
I started playing at the age of 3.
And was it piano?
Yeah. Say it again, please.
Was it piano you started with?
Yes, uh-huh, yes, uh-huh. That's my longest relationship besides my mom and my dad, the piano. We've been together some 57 years.
And who was it?
No, I'm sorry. No, 54 years. Oh, Lord.
Okay.
57.
Well, it's all right. Listen, you're only off by 3. And listen, I'm 53, and I'm... I group things together all the time, and you can't damn us for any of that. But you mentioned it being a relationship. It is a relationship, and you've owned it, and you've enjoyed it, and you've never had to run away. Was there any time period where you didn't get to play for one reason or another, either by choice or by happenstance? Was there any long period of time where you could not play the piano?
Well, unfortunately, this piano has always been close. There have been times in my life, there's been certain periods where whatever life takes its turns and it makes it maybe a little bit difficult. But I like to say, and I may have to be, I don't mean to offer any disrespect, you know, is sometimes for me, music and the piano has been my greatest therapist to get me through life. There's times when I did not want to play, but then I had to play through that pain that actually benefited me. So, you know, sometimes you, in friendships, you like each other, and then you don't like each other, but, you know, you find a way to stay together, you know?
Let me remind folks that are just tuning in now or turning on their radios a little bit late. Cyrus Chestnut is our very special guest, and you've known his music for many years, and finding out more about the man here. He is just a wonderful composer. There's elements of classical in there and gospel and fusion. I mean, some of the best music is fused, and you know, it goes back a long time. And before Cyrus, when people were fusing, and Frank McKay here with Cyrus Chestnut. Who was it for you who really turned you on to music? And, you know, first of all, in the family, and then second of all, out there, who did you hear at that time period that that really hit you? Did you hear Miles Davis early on, or did you have to wait to hear Miles?
Well, you know, growing up in Baltimore, there was always music in the house. My father plays piano, my mom sang. And so I would always hear, you know, music all the time. So there was gospel music always going on. And I was learning how to play Beethoven and Bach. But there was a gentleman by the name of King Curtis. And I remember, I'm going to date myself. I had this device called a show and tell. And what it was a combination of a television, like a TV projector, and a record player. And so to cut to the chase, a lot of times I use the just played records on my show and tell. And my mom had these records down in the cupboard, you know. Yeah, which was like Little Richard, Aretha Franklin, who else? And I saw King Curtis. So I pulled out this King Curtis. And I wanted to, you know, when I was in the fourth grade, I wanted to play the tenor saxophone. So when I heard King Curtis, I was like, yeah, man, this is what I want to do. And so that was number one. But I think what really steered me into jazz was a Monk. And that was honestly by chance. I went to Five and Dime store, F&W Woolworths, and I saw this record that had the picture of this guy on the cover, and the cover was so cool. The name of the record was Thelonious Monk's Greatest Hits. Now, I didn't know who Thelonious Monk was. All I knew was I liked the picture on the cover. So I got it, and I took it home and played it on my show and tell. And at the age of 9, I started listening to Crepuscule with Nelly, Ruby, My Dear, Epistrophe, and I hadn't been the same since.
Wow. What did your folks do?
Well, you know, my father for many years worked for the Postal Service, and my mom was a social worker. But at the local church that they were in, my father played, and my mom sang. Later on, I would take on the duties of playing for the church choir and all.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Thelonious Monk. He's probably somebody, I just listened to Monk not long ago, but he's probably somebody that you've listened to all this time. And when was the last time you listened to a Monk record?
Last time I listened to a Monk record? Yesterday.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
You know, I mean, think about it. Yeah. You like the cover, and you pick it up, and you know it's a cool name. Let's face it, and you didn't know anything about him, and it turns out to be. You talk about relationships. You've had a relationship with Monk this whole time.
Yeah, I like what I heard. I love the melodies. You know, and I knew I just wanted to create melodies as such. No disrespect about Beethoven and Haydn, but you know, I found out that Guido Monk and many, many others, you know, in the jazz idiom were simply just kind of creating on the spot. And there were times that after I would finish playing, practicing my Beethoven, Brahms, or Bach, or whichever, I would just sit and play the piano and I would just enjoy it, like creating things. So what a natural segue to be drawn into the jazz idiom where, you know, where improvisation is key, you know, spontaneous composition. And so, yeah, I guess it was like, well, honestly a natural segue for me to, you know, to gravitate toward the jazz idiom.
Cyrus Chestnut is our very special guest, and he's the voice that you're hearing. Just a generational talent here with me. He's an educator, he's a producer, pianist, and composer, probably first. He's just had an incredible career, still going strong, and I'm thrilled and honored to have him here with me. Cyrus Chestnut, once again, here with me, Frank McKay. The fact that you started at 3 years old, you obviously got attention early on, where people said, wow, look at this young man. I'm sure at 5 and 6, people were fascinated with what you were doing. But when did you break through in your mind? When did you turn into that pianist that you felt you could do anything, or that you felt that you could do your own thing? Was it much later? Was it in your teen years? Was it in your 20s? Was it in single digits? When did you start feeling like you've got this, that this is something that you can do very, very well and at another level?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm still trying to find that pianist, you know? Still working. I'm always working at it. I don't know. It's hard to say, because I've been in music since 3 years old, and it's kind of like a second nature to me. And I guess by the time I got in high school, I really wanted to make a go of playing music. I wanted to learn more about playing music. When I graduated out of high school, I could have easily went into the Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore. I went through the whole preparatory program, but I guess by the time in my high school years, Bach started to share the seat with Bud Powell, so to speak. And, you know, Beethoven, you know, had to share space with people like Jimmy Smith or Herbie Hancock. Haydn had to share the space with Herbie, you know, and Monk and all, you know. So needless to say, by the time I got out of school, I was ready to take on the language of umap shabam, you know. So, I was headed up to Boston to learn more about this music called jazz, of where, you know, I studied at the Berklee College of Music, and, you know, I graduated from there with a degree in jazz composition and arranging. And so now I'm presently enrolled in the University of the Streets, which is an ongoing, it's always research and study, you know.
That's true. Were you after Di Meola? Di Meola was up there. He was probably before you in Berklee, right?
Oh yeah, he was before me.
way before you. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I got to Berklee in 1981, September of 1981.
Okay, yeah, he was in the 70s. He was, you know, early 70s probably.
Yeah.
Who did you study with? Who was there with you at that time?
Well, when I was at Berklee, let's see, I was there along with Greg Osby. I'm kind of in between. Donald Harrison was there, but he wasn't there because he was more or less on his way to New York to start, you know, his tenure with Art Blakey. I mentioned Greg Osby. I was there with Terry Lynn Carrington. Mark Whitfield was there. The great drummer Will Calhoun was there.
Yeah, yeah. Those are some good names right there. Let me ask you, what happened after Berklee? What was your big break? If you know, I don't mean to be trite, but I mean, what was the gig after Berklee that, or maybe during Berklee, that kind of broke through for you? What was a pivot point for you?
Well, I guess it was a series. You asked about who I was studying with at Berklee. There was a gentleman by the name of Michael Marr, who really, you know, kind of was important to give me a foundation But then I was very blessed to spend a lot of time with Donald Brown, which I'm very grateful to this day. When I got out of Berkeley, I played with a singer by the name of Bert Presley, and I did the hotel circuit for a little while. And I got a call from John Hendricks. John got a call from, well, Mark Ledford, from John Hendricks to Mark Ledford, asking me if I would be interested in auditioning for a John Hendricks band. So it just so happened I had a day off, so I'm going to date myself again. I jumped on the People's Express plane.
Wow. Yeah, they're not here anymore.
Yeah. And I went up to New York. I was, you know, and I hung out the afternoon with John, and then I went back to continue the gig. And then 2 days later, I got a call asking if I had a passport. And I said, yes. And I said, then John said to me, we leave in 5 days. It's like, okay. And there it was. There was the whole journey there, you know, going from John Hendricks, leaving John Hendricks to work with Terrence Blanchard and Donald Harrison and their quintet, having the opportunity to work with great people along the way. But then another pivotal moment was getting the opportunity to work with the great vocalist Betty Carter, the other school, because, you know, there were two schools on the street, the school of Art Blakey, the Art Blakey School. And then there was the Betty Carter School. And so I was able to spend a couple years in finishing school, so to speak, with Betty Carter. And then a lot of things that she shared with me, you know, on the job training and some of the conversations I hold on to dear to this day.
Let me again remind everyone, you're listening to the voice of Cyrus Chestnut, and just, I keep saying it, a generational talent. And he is just a wonderful composer, pianist, educator, producer. What do you think you learned right after Berkeley that you didn't learn in Berkeley? And again, you know, that time you spent with John Hendricks, and in retrospect, what did you learn from that experience that you wouldn't have gotten even in another 4 years in Berkeley?
Well, you know, in academia, there's certain things you learn in the practice room, and then there's certain things that you have to learn in the spur of the moment. And so you can sit in the practice room and practice a lot of different patterns and different motifs and how to play them in sequence, and, you know, up the third, down the third, or whatever, you know, sequential motion. But then it's when you get right on the bandstand in front of people who might know something about music, and a lot of people who don't know. But when you're there in the spur of the moment, a lot, you start figuring out what works and what doesn't work. And not only in the playing of music, but even in if you're doing your own set, you learn how to program a set. You learn to listen to the energy. You listen to the energy of the set that you're planning. You learn to figure out when something is getting boring and when you need to change something up. And that's some things that you don't necessarily learn right in the classroom. That's, once again, as Betty Carter said, on the job training. And what I was grateful for with Betty is that she allowed the trio to play one or two numbers before her. And so sometimes if we started too slow, or if we were, for instance, here we go. Here's a great story. We were in Monterey. Ward Hargrove's band had just finished. And so I was downstairs just hanging out. I went up and started the set. And then Betty Carter came on, she just kind of growled at me. And then after the set, she pulled me to the side and says, why did you play the same song as another band did? I said, what do you mean? She said, yeah, you played the same song. You played it at the same tempo. And you played the same tempo and the same key. Didn't you listen? Didn't you ever learn anything about what I told you about programming? Mm. You know, so that, you know, yeah. Yeah. Now, I could even go further. There's so many lessons I could probably talk about with Betty Carter, but there's one more I would like to share.
Keep your thought on this. We're coming up on a quick break. Let me just remind folks of who we're talking to, Cyrus Chestnut, the great Cyrus Chestnut, pianist, composer, educator, producer. Thrilled to have him here, Frank McKay here with the, I hate to categorize it like this, but the jazz great Cyrus Chestnut. We'll be back right after this with more Breaking It Down. I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Cyrus Chestnut is our very special guest. He is a jazz great, and I hate to just throw him into that category because there's a lot of elements of classical and gospel in his music, but I'll tell you what, he's always going to be known as that pianist, a composer, educator, producer, and so much more. Just a generational talent. Cyrus Chestnut is, again, our very special guest. Cyrus, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's glad to be back, yes.
Now, right before the break, you were just telling a wonderful Betty Carter story, and you're about to tell another one, and we had that break. You remember where you were going?
Absolutely, and it's this particular moment is probably one of the of all of the pivotal moments I've had with Betty and with great people. I think this particular moment I'm about to share with you is probably, it sits at the top, and we were in Emeryville, California, at Kimball's East. And I remember I was spending a lot of time listening to Miles Davis. We were talking about Miles Davis earlier. And I was recording If I Were a Bell. And, you know, I was listening to it and researching it. So I decided I was going to go ahead and play it the exact way that I heard it on the recording. And I thought I was doing something really good, you know. And once again, Betty walks on the stage, and, you know, and she looked at me in a way, if looks could kill, I would not be talking to you right now.
Wow.
And then after the set, she hollers to me, Chestnut, get in here. And, you know, I have to tell you the clean version of this story. I can't. She says, what was that mess that you were playing?
Oh, my God.
And I told her, If I Were a Bell. She says, and before I could see the whole title, she says, I know it. I know that tune better from you, better than you. I was there. and so then she proceeded to say, I don't have you here to play something that I heard before.
Wow,
you're here to think. Wow. And in that one statement, I do not have you here to play something that I already heard, changed my whole life, my whole point of view. And it was confirmed by many other of the great musicians later on. I remember having a conversation with the great Jimmy Mantz, and he said he was growing up in Chicago, and, you know, he was trying to play like somebody else, and they would say, man, you need to go find something else. That's my stuff.
Wow.
And so, you know, and then I could even go on back to days at Berkeley when I was trying to ask some of the musicians, how did they do something? They said, that's my stuff. You need to go figure it out. Go figure out something else. It's called figure something else out. So let's go all the way back to my early beginnings when I always loved creating things. So it just brought everything together. At Peabody, we were studying Gregorian chants and the Baroque, but we had to write our own Baroque ideas. We had to write our own Gregorian chants. So I had to create. I just couldn't reproduce just the same thing, you know. So all of that came full front and center once again, and it changed my life. And that's kind of the thing where I stand on today. And when I sit down and play, if I find myself going on automatic, or it's like, oh, I've heard that before, and that bell goes off. Come on, man, find something different.
Yeah, these are things that you're not going to learn necessarily in Berkeley. This is where you're going to learn, you know, this is in the street or on the stage or on the touring bus. You're going to hear and learn things like this. Cyrus Chestnut, everyone, is our very special guest. And Frank McKay with Cyrus.
You mentioned the touring bus. I had one of the greatest piano lessons in my life. I was a part of the 100 Gold Singers piano tour.
Yeah.
And it toured Japan and Korea. And I got a chance to travel with people like Tommy Flanagan, Ray Bryant Jr., Mans, Kenny Barron, Roger Kellaway, Gene Harris, Mal Waldron, John Lewis, Ray Bryant, if I hadn't mentioned before.
Wow.
And the rhythm section was Bob Cranshaw and Grady on bass and Grady Tate on drums. So you talk about stories on the tour bus. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, is there any part of this that, you know, like what happens on the tour bus stays on the tour bus? You know, do you have those kind of things where you it's just an understanding and you know, or was it not that wild? You know, again, touring, you know, is different, you know, and well, I would think with jazz as in rock, you know, it's different, and you know, the wildness of the generation before you was unbelievable. Were you seeing a lot of, and I don't mean to be specific or even you know, too nosy, were you seeing a lot of drugs? Were you seeing a lot of you know, exorbitant drinking and sex? And were you seeing things like that you would see in a Coltrane movie or a movie about Coltrane or something like that? Were you seeing a lot of that?
Well, you know, I guess unfortunately that's the scene. That's kind of was one of those things that were kind of present, you know. But briefly, you know, I never was one to, you know, to put on that particular coat. I remember in one situation, I walked into a room and there was this white substance on the table. I had no idea what it was. But then when I saw it going up people's noses, I said, "Oh shoot, okay." Yeah. and then there was a voice inside me that says, "Now, you make sure you stay away from that." Yeah. And so therefore I did, you know. So, you know, that's something that I was never interested in, and not interested in, and never will be interested in.
Well, thank God for that. So many people have that demon. Let's go back to the creative part. And, you know, you were admonished, you know, don't play something I've played before or that I've heard before. Play something, in other words, be creative. And you've obviously done that with your composing, and you've done tremendous work songwriting and composing. How much material, and I don't know if you're a statistics keeper or if you have it in your mind, Do you have an idea of how many pieces you've written, or and I guess the other part of that is there are a lot of Cyrus Chestnut pieces that we've never heard?
No, I guess I never really numbered them from number one to two. It's just you know, you write an idea, you play it, and then you go to another idea. So I guess if I have a hard drive pretty full. I have a hard drive pretty full of music. Some things completed and some things not completed. Some things recorded and some things not recorded. So, you know, nevertheless, you keep trying to, whatever strong ideas you have, you try to put them out on paper. Because music is always about going forward. You never stay on beat one. You know, one is there, but here comes two. You can't stay on two because three is on the way, you know. And so chord changes always keep moving, you know. One goes to two, one to three, six, two, five, whatever. Music always keeps moving forward. The beat keeps moving on. So it can't, you know, I always try to keep moving forward as best as I can. And hopefully, when it's all said and done, there'll be a body of work that just kind of explains what I've done.
Well, there's a great body of work. there. It's terrific. It's something you have to look back and be very proud of. Give us a website or a social media site where people could follow along with what you're doing and what you've done. What's a good starting point for those wanting to know more about Cyrus Chestnut?
Well, you know, I've just had my website, cyruschestnut.net, revamped. And so that's a place of getting a lot of information. And I do have a presence on Facebook, too. And so I'm working on, you know, dealing with the social media thing. And so if you type my name in the Google search or the Yahoo search, you should be able to find what's going on with me.
Listen, congratulations on, you said body of work. Wow, you put together a beautiful body of work. And congratulations on all your success ongoing and in the past. And stay safe and have your family and God bless you. And keep everything going. Just keep doing what you're doing. You do it very, very, very well. Cyrus Chestnut, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so very much.
Cyrus Chestnut, everyone, just a great talent. And again, I keep saying it, not just a jazz player, but again, jazz great. Cyrus Chestnut, he has elements of gospel. He has elements of classical in there. And I guess like all of the greats, they use different feels and they use different styles and genres. And it blends, and it's so much easier to say jazz great Cyrus Chestnut, pianist, composer, and educator, producer, wonderful guy. This is the first time we're speaking, and he just sounds like a wonderful man and very modest. And what a career he is having! And when you look back in his past, he's got to be very proud of what he's done and what he's continuing to do. And hopefully that hard drive that he mentioned will all be available for us to hear and to buy and so forth. Buy everything you can get on this man. He's terrific. Cyrus Chestnut, everyone, has been our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.